You're tuned in to the Kojo Namdi Show. I'm Dan Reed of Greater Greater Washington, sitting in for Kojo. Legions of little girls beg their parents for ballet classes, but relatively few boys do. And while many girls are taken to the Nutcracker, the same can't be said for their brothers. Boys who do find their way into a ballet class might not have any male classmates, and outside of class may find themselves teased or even bullied for their interest in ballet. And boys of color or from poor neighborhoods encounter additional obstacles. Even in the D.C. area, home of the Washington Ballet and a host of other respected companies and schools, it's challenging to attract boys into ballet. But the scene for male dancers has brightened over the years, and locally, ballet enthusiasts are working to welcome boys into their world. Joining us to discuss this today is Matthew Gardner, the director and choreographer of Signature Theater's production of Billy Elliot. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
So, Matthew, the Signature Theater is now featuring a musical about a boy in ballet called Billy Elliot, which runs until January 6th, based on a well-known movie. What's it about?
It is about an 11-year-old boy who lives in northern England. His father is a miner, his brother is a miner, and one day he stumbles out of a boxing class and into a ballet class, and his world is changed, and it's about this little boy and this community that comes together to support this child's dream of becoming a ballet dancer.
So, of course, this performance stars a young man. Who is the dancer who plays Billy? And has he have a background in ballet?
Yeah, there are actually two actors. The role is so demanding, and we have 8 shows a week, so it's not something that an 11-year-old child can do that many times a week. So the one is named Liam Redford, and he's an amazing young dancer from New Jersey. And the other is Owen Tabaka, who is a young dancer from Alexandria, Virginia. And he's a remarkably gifted tapper and ballet dancer. And so they impress me every day with their talents and their abilities.
Now, at the start of the story, Billy Elliot is not supposed to know anything about ballet. How do you make them, these very talented young men, look like beginners?
By telling them to not be so good. I mean, it is a trick of sort of toning down their abilities, because as you rehearse anything in the beginning, they struggle with things, and that seems natural and amazing. And then as we continue to rehearse, they get better and better. So it's just a constant reminder that you need to concentrate really hard and remember that he doesn't know how to do a single pirouette just yet. You have to really, we have to build that over time, over the course of 2.5 hours.
Let's see. We've got an email from Barry in Ashburn, Virginia, who says, I recall from my childhood a magazine issue, probably Life magazine circa the 50s, in which photos of professional baseball fielders in action were compared to photos of male ballet dancers. Gil Hodges, the Dodgers first baseman, was shown making a catch that required him to stretch or leap in a manner comparable to a male ballet dancer. Now, Matthew, growing up in College Park, you were yourself a serious ballet dancer, and like Billy, the only only boy in a class full of girls. Billy Elliot seems like a natural choice for you, but you said that you were at least a little hesitant to take on the show at first. What changed your mind?
I knew from the get-go that it was a story that that I could relate to, that this story of a child who all that they wanted to do was dance and all they dreamed about was that's something I could relate to. I was nervous about the scale of the show. Mm-hmm. It's huge. And the child has to tap, he has to do ballet, he has to tumble, he has to fly. It's a daunting thing. And so to take that on, I wasn't sure that that's exactly what I wanted to do, but I sat down with the script, I sat down with the music, and I just really connected with the story, and so eventually I took it on.
You started ballet when you were 8. Could you talk a little bit about your ballet story?
Yeah, so I used to always dance around the house, and I would beg my mother to let me take ballet classes. I think I had seen the Nutcracker at the Washington Ballet, and at first, she was resistant, but then she said, if you're going to do this, we're going to find the best ballet school in the city, and we're going to try and find one that is has an all-boys ballet class. And so she called around, and the Washington Ballet at the time was starting an all-boys ballet class. They were various ages, and I think there were only about 8 of us. But it started as an all-boys class. It very quickly became me and a bunch of girls. And I studied with the Washington Ballet until I was about 16 years old. So from the age of 8 till 16, I was studying and took with Mary Day and many amazing teachers there, and did the Nutcracker every year. And I was had fully intended to be a ballet dancer until I was in high school and realized that I had more interest in choreography and being on the other side of creating dances.
I wanted to bring in another story about a young ballet dancer. I'm also here today with Rafael Bejarano, who's in the studio company of the Washington Ballet. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Could you tell me a little bit about your background? I've read that your father is a bullfighter, and you and your brother studied ballet while growing up in Guadalajara, Mexico. How did you discover ballet?
Well, it was because my older brother, he wanted to go to be an artist, right? So he had to go to this high school where he had to learn paint, music, dance, etc., etc. Then the second semester, he had to choose a specific, and he decided to dance. He decided for ballet. Then he invited my younger brother and me to see a ballet class and take that ballet class. So that's how I kind of got involved. I didn't like it as much, but my little brother loved it. So then he was like, hey, Dad, can you take me to a more serious school? So then he went to that more serious school because we only took classes on Saturdays. And I used to go pick him up and see how he would like stretch, would do other things. But then flamenco caught more my attention. So I started dancing flamenco first. And then since I saw my little brother doing all of those things, I decided to give it a shot.
How did your father react to all of his sons performing dance?
Well, in the beginning, he was shocked. He couldn't believe it because we were going to be the fifth generation of bullfighters in my family. So once he saw that my older brother started dancing, he went to talk to the school director and said, hey, my son wanted to be this, and now he's choosing this. Why I want him to move from specific. Then the school director said, okay, I can do that, but I want you to know that you might be frustrating his future, because if he decides that, you should let him. And then he remembered that something similar happened to him when he was growing up.
We just read an email comparing ballet to baseball. Do you see similarities between the bullfighting background that you come from and ballet?
Of course. First of all, bullfighters, they have to wear tights as well. They wear special shoes, and we dance along music. And I remember I asked the same question to my dad, and then he was like, yes, you guys dance along music, and then I dance along death, because it's something really dangerous.
We have a quick technical question tweeted by JC Velasquez. Were ballet shoes only in pink or white in the 80s? Does anybody know the answer to this?
They were in all colors. Whatever color, you just dye your shoes. They were white, and you dye them gray, black, whatever. But generally, pink is the color for white girls.
That's the voice of Adrian Vincent James, who teaches ballet at the Duke Ellington School of the Arts in Washington. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
To go through all of my pages. You teach ballet to boys and girls at the Duke Ellington School, which is majority African American. Could you tell us a little bit about ballet at Ellington and your students?
Well, the students come from all over Washington, D.C. We teach from 9th grade to 12th grade. We have four levels. We have point. We have men's class, and they are trained in classical ballet, modern Horton technique, and African dance. And generally, they go on into college, or they go on into professional schools, or into a company.
Yeah. And now, Rafael, you followed a similar path to that. You won a scholarship to study at the Washington School of Ballet when you were 15, and you left your family to move here to the United States. You know, now that you're 19 and a member of the studio company, do you feel, you know, could you talk about that experience? You know, was that sacrifice worth it?
Yes, it was. Even though I had to leave my home, my people, my family, I've grown so much as a dancer, as a person, and as an artist.
And I'm also here today with Olivier Munoz, who's the artistic director of the Maryland Youth Ballet. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Dan.
Now, like Raphael, you also had a father who was not excited about your interest in ballet. Could you tell us about your experience growing up in France and how you managed to become a ballet star despite your family's attitude?
Well, I was very lucky that my parents, even though they were not, for me to dance, because we had to follow some sort of guidance from the parents. I need to be either law or medicine, and I belonged nowhere near those two fields. And started dancing at 13 years old. I was playing piano from 5 to 13, and a ballet class opened. It was a satellite from the National Conservatory of Paris, and they opened one in Lyon and Marseille. I was, as soon as I saw it, I was extremely attracted to it. And the director asked me, would you like to come and join us? And I said, yes. So for a few months, I started taking classes. It was kind of unconventional. And then the fall came, and it says, we have an audition for the acceptance here at the conservatory. Would you like to participate? So I said, of course. So I did. And there was a whole panel of teachers and directors, and they thought I was very gifted, and they invited me with a scholarship to come. And then a couple of years later, I was taking classes every day. A couple of years later, I was my teacher told me, you know, we only can offer ballet here, and you need to be open to other art forms. I mean, not art forms, style of dance, because here we're limited. And we went to audition. I went to audition secretly with my teacher on a train ride. We went to Cannes, to Rosalie Hightower International Ballet School, and did my class. The director offered me full scholarship, room and board, and we're back to home in Lyon. And my teacher says, we're going to have to talk to your parents. So they says, hey, well, we'll set it up. And of course, my parents were sort of shocked, but I was very lucky that they never said, no, you can't do it. They told me, you can do it, but you don't expect our financial aid. So that was fine. And therefore, I went through my classes. I moved to Cannes, and a few years later, I won the Prix Lausanne and was offered a full contract with the English National, under Peter Schaffers at the time, and that's my career started. My parents came to see me dance and saw me dance. They never had seen me dance before. They never saw their son in a pair of tights before. And the first performance was Sleeping Beauty, and it was doing The Prince. So they really came with tears backstage, and they told me, we had no idea. They had no idea. And which it's normal, but from that day on, they were extremely proud of me and, you know, always there for me afterwards. So I was very lucky that I could continue my career this way.
That is an amazing story. We've got a call from a parent who may have a story of their own about their child. Adrian in Vienna, Virginia, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much for taking my call. Yes, I have a very similar story. I grew up in a dance group, folkloric Colombian music, and then when I had my son, my first son, I saw he had talent. And then my group, we'd actually travel to Europe and dance. But my training was all basically self-taught and taking classes here and there. And I saw that my son had talent, and he got into, I taught him until he was about 9 years old, and then he got into hip-hop. And in reference to ballet, he was doing very well in hip hop. And I was telling him, you need to take other courses. You need to take, just like the other gentleman said, ballet. I told him you need to take jazz because this is what you want to do. And the school, fortunately, that was there saw his talent for hip hop, but they told him the exact same thing. And he fought me tooth and nail. But he's currently 14 now. He's taking ballet, jazz, musical theater, and the ballet is extraordinary because it's helped him with his balance, his confidence. It even helps him with soccer, which even the coaches have noticed that he cannot be knocked down very easily. He's very good on his feet. And I'm a great promoter of ballet because it really is good for everything, for even learning how to, you know your body and such. Yeah, that's my story.
Thank you so much for calling in today. We'll continue our conversation about young men in ballet after a short break. Stay tuned.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picou and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Reed, in for Kojo Namdi. We're talking today about young men in ballet. Olivier Munoz, you are the artistic director of the Maryland Youth Ballet. Could you tell us a little bit about that? And how many boys are in the school? How many girls?
We have about 1,200 students, children, and about 50 men, boys and men, from age 6 all the way up to 17. More or less, yes. About 14 years ago, I sort of started. I was just recently retired, and I was taking classes at Maryland Youth Ballet to stay in shape. And the director asked me, you know, what I saw in the school that was lacking. I said, well, I see little boys here and there. She said, oh, yeah, they come and go. And I thought, well, you know, in my school, we usually had the kids growing up as a team, all the boys in one class, and they sort of grew up this way, and they back up each other's back, and they grow, and then after that, you integrate them slightly, a little bit by a little bit with the girls, and there's a healthy competition, boys against girls, and that team grows, and they become, you know, older guys, and they help partnering, and you develop beautiful young dancers.
Now, Adrian, you teach ballet at the Duke Ellington School of the Arts. Could we talk a little bit about gender differences in ballet? You've said in the past that nobody wants to see a boy dance like a girl. What do you mean by that?
Well, men should dance like men. When you see a man on stage, you want to see masculinity, you want to see strength, you want to see a common place for people to invoke the male strength. A male dancing like a female, you don't want to see that on stage. When you see a male is supposed to partner a female, the lady is supposed to be feminine, the male is supposed to be masculine. So that's the relationships that we want to see on the stage. Generally, if someone is a little bit frailing, as we say, we just try to get them to pump it up and to show their masculine side.
Matthew, I could see you sort of responding to that with your body language. Oh. I'm curious if you have any thoughts.
No. I think that definitely is. When I started in ballet school and I was in a class with all girls and predominantly taught by female teachers, there was a lot of sort of side coaching that would happen. Sometimes from the teachers themselves, and other times they would bring in members from the ballet, from the Washington Ballet Company, to work with me separately, because there are expectations for how a male dancer should move. And I think that those the ideas of how people should move are changing. I think that we see a lot of ballets that are happening now where men are partnering other men, and I think it's changing. I think it's interesting, but at the same time, I think it's important to have, as you were saying, a sort of masculine energy in the way that male dancers move, or at least that is a way that we can move and that we're taught to move. And so,
yeah, got an email from Michelle in Fairfax who says, "I would love to send my 4-year-old daughter to a ballet class. But from what I've seen, these classes offer more opportunities for girls to dress up and enact princess fantasies than to dance. Are there programs out there that are more gender neutral and are also welcoming of boys and or girls who are tomboys or don't want to dress like Cinderella for a dance class?" Anyone? Are there more gender neutral options for students getting into ballet? Or does that, you know, go against the purpose?
I don't think there's really gender neutral sort of No, I don't think so. I mean, they basically, the ladies and the boys are, they have a basic training, which is similar, but then at a point, the men are going to be trained differently than the ladies because what is requested from the men needs more power, more jumps, more turn, more athletic. That's when they enter, also partnering the ladies, but the ladies usually are the ladies. Every little girl wants to be a princess at one point, and if they later on it changes, you know, it's different when you take ballet when you're 2, when you're 7, and then when you're 14, the interest changes, and you're trained basically, you know, as a cookie cutter, I guess, and personality comes afterwards. You've got to bring your own artist.
Also, I wanted to, on that topic of like gender and gender differences in ballet, I wanted to bring up Chase Jauncey. He is a male ballet dancer with the English National Ballet, which is in a production of The Sleeping Beauty. He is the first male dancer to perform as part of the female ensemble. That means he dances on point, if I understand, using the terminology correctly, and identifies as genderqueer. Do you see more opportunities for male dancers that may want to perform in more female roles?
I mean, I do. I think that talking about Billy Elliot for a second, you know, in that film, they reference Matthew Bourne's Swan Lake, which was so influential in the 90s in terms of, I mean, it was just such an important ballet and really was a new look at Swan Lake through a queer lens. So I think there are lots of examples of that. And I think that's important.
Whew. Let's go to the phones. I've got a call from Pat in Sandy Spring, Maryland, and their son's experience with dance. Pat, are you on the air?
I am. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm great. I just wanted to say that I had a son. I was taking modern dance, and my son came to my class, and he said, I want to do this. I want to take dance. And my husband was not so sure. He kept thinking that I had convinced him somehow. I said, no, this is really what he wants to do. So he danced for a long time, about 6 or 7 years. And I asked him once when he was in like first or second grade, so what do your friends at school think about your taking dance? And he looked at me like I had come from the planet Mars and said, Mom, you don't think I tell them that, do you? So, but he continued to really enjoy it. I do think that one of the challenges for boys in dance is that their bodies develop at a different pace than the girls. So he was the only boy in his class, and the girls got to the point where they were ready to move ahead, but he wasn't quite there yet. And that was really challenging for him to have to stay back, and I think that's one of the reasons he stopped.
Thank you very much, Pat. Raphael, as the youngest member of our panel today, is that something that you have experienced, sort of challenges keeping up with your female counterparts in ballet or encountering any kind of bullying for participating in ballet?
Well, yes. Back in Mexico, I used to be bullied a lot, really, really often. And I had a lot of bad comments, negative comments coming from my family, not my parents or my brothers, if not the outside part of my family. And it was really hard for me because sometimes I would be during lunch sitting by myself because other people would judge me, or they would say like, how come your dad is a bullfighter and you end up being a dancer? But then at the end of the day, I was like, well, they're not living my life. I'm doing this because I want to. And I don't really compare myself with girls because, as we've mentioned before, the men, it's really different than the woman in the future. Like Mr. Olivier said, we do jump, we turn, we look really different, so we don't really compare ourselves to each other.
We've got a tweet in response to our brief mention of Chase Jauncey. Jessica tweets, no room for beyond the binary in dance. And I believe we have another call from somebody who wants to comment about the differences in gender among ballet performers. Peg in Springfield, Virginia. Are you there, Peg?
Yes, I am. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Yeah, I just tuned in, and I think that most of your guests are from the professional dance world, but I just wanted to challenge the statement that male dancers are more athletic than women and that male dancers don't want to dance like girls. I myself enjoy ballet, and I know it's very traditional, but I'm sure a female dancer would not think that she's any less athletic than a man, and I don't know why a man wouldn't want to dance like a girl. So I was just calling to challenge that notion.
Well, thank you very much. Do y'all have any first responses to that?
The ladies of today have to be athletic as well. The build has changed. They've got to be athletic because of the demands of the choreographers with new works. The ladies' body have to be more athletic, more toned. And the choreography are more athletic in our days.
Yeah, and I would say I would say that I certainly love to watch men challenge sort of. I like to watch choreography that challenges the perception that men or women can only move one way. So I don't think anybody here is saying that, but I think there are certain ways that male dancers are trained. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you're able to find different ways to move once you are working in this profession, I think that's exciting, and I think that that's interesting.
I wanted to shift to one of the other sort of barriers that people may face in ballet. Adrian, you are the first African-American to dance with the esteemed Houston Ballet, but you grew up here in Southeast Washington in the 60s and 70s. How were you first exposed to ballet?
Well, my mother took me to children's theater, and through children's theater, Mike Malone was one of the choreographers. He's also the co-founder of the Duke Ellington School of the Arts. And back in 1970, they had a program workshop for Crazy Arts. And some girls actually from the program invited me to the dance school, which I attended Jones Haber School of Ballet, and joined the Capitol Ballet. And I danced with McLean Ballet. A couple of girls invited me. And I had no problem. My parents my father was interior decorator. My mother worked for the government. So they always exposed us to the arts, the symphony and all. And I won a scholarship to School American Ballet after a little training and studied in New York at Ballet Theater, Dance at the Harlem, Alvin Ailey, all on scholarship. I was very blessed. And no one in my family ever pushed against it, as other families have pushed against their young men dancing classical ballet or dancing. Yeah, I say classical ballet because, like we say, hip hop, jazz, the modern are easy forms that they can see you dancing. But classical ballet is a required or acquired taste, I would say.
Who were your ballet heroes growing up? Were any of them African-American?
My hero, rest in peace, is Arthur Mitchell, founder of the Dance Theater Harlem. When I was a little boy, I used to look through all the books and magazines, and his picture would always appear. He was the only black dancer in New York City Ballet. So his picture, Arthur's picture, was everywhere. And he inspired me, and I was surrounded by white girls all around, and hardly a few black girls, except for when I went to Capitol Ballet. And it just always inspired me. I said, here's a man who started the Dance Theater Harlem after finding out that Martin Luther King was killed. And so going to New York and following that journey and becoming the first African-American to dance with Houston Ballet is a blessing, because you have to give it to your parents, because your parents and your community are the people who inspire you and who let you be free and let you be yourself so that you become an artist.
Adrian, do you find that boys of color face any particular challenges getting into and sticking with ballet?
Yes. First of all, there's an economic problem. Most ballet schools cost a lot of money. So financially, it's hard for African-American young men to go to a ballet school unless they offer a scholarship. And sometimes they do offer scholarships for young men. But the exposure, they're not exposed to classical ballet. They might go to a movie or they might go to a hip-hop show or something. In the current climate of America, they're not challenged. Mm. So to go to a ballet or to be inspired by ballet, it's an acquired taste, like I said. And that's about it.
You know, we have been getting some emails and tweets from parents who share experiences about the difficulties of getting getting a child in ballet, those logistical things. Allison in Severn, Maryland emails, finding dance clothes for young boys is so incredibly difficult. Mainstream stores like Target and Walmart carry girls' dance equipment, but I had to track down a specific dance store about 40 minutes from our home to find boys' dance clothes. The logistics of getting everything a boy needs for dance is a nightmare. Oh, now we have Michael, the former dancer on the line. Are you there, Michael?
Yes, I am. I'm not a former dancer, but I'm on the line.
My apologies. How are you?
I'm good. So here's my story. I'm 72 years old. I like to swim. When I was in sixth grade, my mother decided I should take ballet. So the thing that I remember from that is that it helped my swimming. Remember, point your toes. So I do a lot of swimming. I've been a lifeguard on the Atlantic Ocean for 2 years when I was younger. And canoeing and ballet influence the way I swim. I just thought I'd say that.
Thank you. Olivier, we've talked about some of the challenges that boys face in ballet, but there are also some unique advantages for men. Could you speak to that?
What kind of advantages? I think the boys are, I work very hard. I know we're saying that we have so few boys, but in comparison of ladies, of course, but I think we have, with time, the boys have been more and more involved with dance. I think it's quite amazing that at Maryland Youth Ballet, we have 50 young men, and many places have, the enrollment of men is really growing. But the spots for the companies are also smaller. Because there's not so much funding for the arts. The positions are fewer, and it is even challenging for a good dancer, a good male dancer, to find jobs.
Hmm. I can imagine that with so many fewer to choose from, it can be a lot harder for someone putting on a show to find someone who meets their needs.
Correct. Yes. And this is why you need to enroll in schools where you have, if you want to be really the best, you really need to get into a very good school where you know your all areas are going to be covered, you know, weight training, and you're taught by men, and really grow. It's very, very, very important to get into a good school right away.
We'll continue our conversation about young men in ballet after a short break. Are you a boy or man in ballet? What has your experience been? Give us a call. Welcome back. I'm Dan Reed, in for Kojo Namdi. We're here today talking about the experiences of young men in ballet, and many young men who participate in ballet might find that they are being bullied or made fun of for performing in a traditionally female activity. I'd like to go to the phones really quick for a call from Linda in Fairfax, Virginia. Linda, are you there?
I am. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to address, or ask your panelists to address, how we can move forward in helping the general public understand that boys being involved in ballet is an athletic and an intellectual activity for them, and help them understand that they don't do this because they're perceived as a particular stereotype. My son loves ballet. He loves the technique is so difficult. It takes so much concentration. It's a lot more intense than other forms of dance, in his opinion. when we were overseas in Germany, we didn't have any problems with people having an issue with him being in ballet. And as soon as we moved to this area, he has been kicked and bullied and talked down and humiliated repeatedly at school. And he likes girls.
Thank you very much, Linda. Matthew Gardner, you're the director of Signature Theater's production of Billy Elliot about a young boy who does ballet. And during the break, you were talking with some of our co-panelists about your experiences being bullied growing up. Could you speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely bullied for my love for ballet. I remember many an afternoon riding home on the school bus where I was picked on for dancing. There were a few times that I came back to school after a performance of the Nutcracker and hadn't successfully taken off all of my makeup and was bullied for that. Every person deals with this differently. I don't think there's a solution to this problem, but I can say that for me personally, it only served to make me more driven. It served to make me really strive to reach my goals. We were talking off the air about, I really looked up to people like Mikhail Baryshnikov and Gene Kelly, and I had role models, and I had people to look up to and people that I was striving to be like. And I had amazing parents who would remind me of that. When I was picked on, would be like, well, you can be just like Gene Kelly. You can be just like this dancer that you admire so much. And so just keep going after your dream, and one day they'll look at you and the joke will be on them. Yeah.
So the reviews of Billy Elliot at the Signature Theater have been really positive. Are you seeing many men and boys in the audience?
We are. Yeah, we are. And, you know, I think it's important to see these kind of stories. I always say that one of the first films that I saw that made me want to dance was Newsies. Mm-hmm. And to see this, which is maybe not the greatest film, but it was a film where it showed men dancing and boys dancing. And it was to see that represented in stories and on stage is important. And I think if kids leave Billy Elliot and it makes one or two boys want to dance, well, then I feel like we've done our job.
You know, Raphael, you are one of the men in the Washington Ballet. You know, what has your experience been like there? Are there a lot of men in that company?
Yes, they are. You know, in the company, I would say there is half of the percentage in total that are men in the company. And then in the school, there are so many kids, young boys, that are taking classes and that want to become a ballet dancer.
Got some tweets coming in. You can tweet us at Kojo Show. Let's see. We've got one from District Dancewear who tweets, "Thanks, Kojo Show, for this important conversation on boys and ballet. Over the years, we've had boys in and out of our classes, but our goal is to have an all-boys class to introduce the discipline, artistry, and physicality of ballet to many more." Adrian, you teach ballet at the Duke Ellington School. Do you have all-boys classes?
Yes, we do. We have a special grant by the ABLE Foundation, which specifically addresses young men in ballet and trying to get young men into ballet from the outside world, as we say. And our classes, we teach classical ballet for the men.
Olivia, you teach at the Maryland Youth Ballet. Do you have all boys classes as well?
Yes, we do. When they're young, they are like all together. All men's are together, and they're taught by men's as well.
Do they differ in any way from girls' classes?
The classes themselves?
Yes.
A little bit. If I'm teaching an all-men class, I would focus more on what we call pliés, what we call bending your legs, the quality of the bending, because the beauty of a men's jump is how you take off and how you land. You've got to take off and land very lightly. But the power is in the takeoff. So you approach the class in a different manner.
Now, Adrian, it's for a long time, you know, we talked a little bit about the issues of race in ballet, and it was inconceivable for many years that a black male dancer would be allowed to partner with a white ballerina. You know, as the perception of who performs in ballet changes, do you think the ballet world has overcome that sort of prejudice?
I think we are slowly overcoming that prejudice. In most ballet companies, there's not a thing about a black man dancing with a white girl or a girl of color anymore. Those stereotypes and things have stopped since the Dance de Harlem. And other companies, Cleo Parker Roberts and Dallas Black Dance Theater. We have a lot of companies, Alvin Ailey, where, you know, the men dance with the women. So there's no color as far as black men. Now, as far as black women, black men have a little bit more of a chance of dancing with an international or national company than black females. So I would say that there's less prejudice, because you can look at Brooklyn Mack, who just left the Washington Ballet. He did a lot for the Washington, D.C. area by exposing, by being a strong black man and on the stage. And a lot of young men who came to the ballet or go to the ballet or went to the ballet got to see him. And he did a lot in the community to outreach for young African-American men, and we were very proud of him.
Now, I read that he started ballet to get better at football as a young man. You know, what did Brooklyn Mack mean to this area's dance community?
Oh, I think he just enriched everybody who saw. He was a beautiful dancer. He is a beautiful dancer, excuse me. And him being seen on stage, I mean, if you're a young man and you see somebody who looks like you, it gives you power. It gives you commitment to be better, whatever you do. I mean, one thing about ballet, and it's a discipline, it's an art form, it's a discipline. So if you get disciplined in anything that you do, you will succeed in life, and long as you follow your dreams and be who you are, not trying to be anybody else. Don't worry about bullying, don't worry about it. It's a time, it's a phase, you'll go through it, you'll live, and you'll be strong, and follow your dreams. Most of all, be who you are, and people will love you for that.
We've got a call from Rebecca in Baltimore, Maryland. Rebecca, are you there?
Absolutely. I'm loving this show, so thank you all. My first husband was the star ballet dancer of the Paris Opera, having come through, you know, a class of like 300 kids, and then it's like kind of cutthroat. And by the time they're 16, there are only about three left from each new incoming class when they're tiny kids. And the boys, the men, male dancers, were kind of like rock stars. I mean, women would literally throw their keys up on stage at times, you know. So very different. I have to say, I have to differ a little bit with Raphael about kind of characterizing all-girl ballerinas really wanting those princess roles, because I think that arguably, the two greatest female dancers of the last century in ballet would be Sylvie Guillaume and Judith Jameson, who were certainly not princess types, not in their private lives nor on stage. They could do it, but that was not who they were. They were, you know, consummate, athletes. The other thing is, the Maryland State Head of the Arts Council for Maryland is himself a ballet dancer and a choreographer, Ken Skresh, and just such a brilliant person who prides himself on being a male dancer. And then just finally, have you ever seen how the prison system in the Philippines uses dance as a reward to be able to participate in dance productions as a reward for good behavior? If you want to have really a moment of joy, go look at the Thriller. And then
thank you very much, Rebecca. I believe there was a question for you, Raphael. What do you have a response to that? Girls not wanting to be little princesses, or there's more to that among females in ballet?
I mean, I think there are two different types of ballerinas. There's a princess ballerina and also kind of like the wild ballerina. From my point of view, we have Kitri, we have Diana from Diana and Acteon. We have different characters.
Olivier, what do you think about that?
Yes, there's not every dancer is going to be a princess. I mean, you can be stereotype if you have a look, you know, and a way of moving. You're going to be put into a certain yes, like you said, characters, different characters. Not everybody can be the Sleeping Beauty. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to need to have somebody who's spicy and powerful, and not the Swan Lake, who's the white swan is very vulnerable, but the black swan will be a contrast, crisp and strong.
We've got a tweet that's at Kojo Show from Sasha, who wanted to comment on the gender roles and gender-neutral roles in ballet and how it's becoming more commonplace. The more we see women partnering with other women in ballet, the more accepting audiences will be of male-on-male partnering as well. We must continue to challenge perceptions in dance. Olivier, I see you nodding your head. Do you have a response to that?
I don't think it's really new. I mean, I'm just thinking of Laure Lubovitch, Pas de Deux, he did, I don't remember now, right now off my head. It was just two men, but we must not forget it's art, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. art is for everyone, you know. And when we talk about dancing, maybe not specifically ballet, dance anywhere, everywhere, from the beginning of time. And that's why everybody, if you have that in you, the rhythm, the music, you're just going to start tapping and you're going to start moving and wiggling. And this is the fun part. For us ballet dancers, it's a different sort of rhythm, but it's still dancing.
Mm. Adrian, you teach young people ballet at the Duke Ellington School. You know, are you, how are you continuing to challenge perceptions that they might have?
Wow.
It's a big one, right? This is like the close of the show. I just want to go out in like a big bang. You know?
Well, the thing is, the thing is being yourself. The perception is in being yourself. If you be yourself, and society will always make the norms, but you can always go above the norms, and you can just be fruitful and just be you. Because in the end, you're going to have to love yourself. You're going to have to love what you do. It's an art form, and you're going to have to do a lot of work. It's more work than glory in the art form. And like it's like 5% talent and 95% discipline. So if you love yourself, and we encourage them to be their best. That's all you can do with every human, whether it's ballet or dance or anything that you do, you have to be encouraging.
Thank you very much for being here today. Matthew Gardner is the director and choreographer of Signature Theater's production of Billy Elliot, which is up through January 6th. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Rafael Bejarano is in the studio company of the Washington Ballet. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
And Olivier Munoz is the artistic director of the Maryland Youth Ballet. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Dan.
Today's show about young boys in ballet was produced by Lauren Marco. Coming up tomorrow, recreational marijuana possession was legalized in D.C. 4 years ago, but systems to regulate and tax it were not, creating a legal gray area for local cannabis growers, sellers, and users. Now, after winning re-election, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser says she wants to put forward a new plan to tax and regulate marijuana locally. What does that mean for people who have fought for and against it for years? We'll discuss tomorrow at noon. I'm Dan Reed, sitting in for Kojo Namdi.
The Kojo Namdi Show is produced by Ruth Tam, Mark Gunnery, Julie Deppenbrock, Margaret Barthel, and Lauren Marco. Our managing producer is Ingelisa Schrobsdorf. Our intern is Talia Drayton. Our engineer is Josephine Neonai. For past shows and more content, go to kojoshow.org.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.